This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
I'm Danny Shapiro, and this is The Way We Live Now. Today is day 90 since I've started taking naps, and day 40 of this podcast. There are people who are riding out this pandemic with spouses they're not getting along with. There are those who are at the start of new relationships who decided to speed things up by sheltering in place together. And then there are those who were just at the start of something new, a hard-won romance now put to the test of distance and global anxiety. My guest today is Maya Schanbog-Lang, a 41-year-old divorced mom, a writer whose memoir, What We Carry, is just out. Maya waded into the dating waters just at the start of 2020, and lightning struck, and then the pandemic. Maya, thank you so much for joining me to talk about The Way We Live Now.
Danny, thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure and a privilege.
So where are you right now? Describe what you see, your surroundings, in as much detail as you can muster.
At the moment, I am sitting in my kitchen. It is a rainy day outside. The house feels curiously empty because my daughter is with her father, with whom I share joint custody. I am feeling the strangeness of this time.
And where do you live?
I live just north of Manhattan in a town called Hastings on Hudson. I'm about 15 miles north of the city.
And has your daughter been going back and forth between you and her father?
She has. So we split the time pretty evenly. And since this whole, you know, period started, the quarantine, he has been working from home. I've been working from home. We live very close to one another, just a few miles apart. So we've basically been treating it as though there's like a tunnel between our households.
Yeah, I wondered about divorced parents with joint custody during this time and how complicated it can be of creating that sort of bubble of you're sort of back in a bubble in a way with the person.
Mm-hmm.
But tell me a little bit about what your life was like pre-pandemic. You're a writer. You had a memoir coming out in the near future. You teach, you coach, you edit. And you had just, at the age of 41, met someone you really, really liked.
Yes. So, you know, cut to, you know, the start of the new year, the start of a new decade, 2020. I had been separated from my ex-husband for over a year at that point. And I had decided in December to open myself up to the possibility of dating. And I went into it in a very guarded way, thinking, you know, I'm finally in a place where I'm happy and independent. And after doing a lot of emotional work, I feel good about myself. And do I really want to risk kind of opening up the can of worms that dating can be? And so I went into dating just deciding to be mercilessly picky and to give myself permission to do that, as opposed to kind of making allowances and excusing certain things. And I met someone wonderful who, you know, we started messaging in December. We had our first date right at the start of the new year. I think it was January 3rd. And we met for lunch in the city. And our lunch lasted, I think, 2.5 hours. You know, it wasn't your typical date. There wasn't wine. There wasn't the soft glow of candlelight. It was two divorced parents meeting in the bright light of day. And I think really just being ourselves. And I felt so nervous because he was insanely handsome, you know, just so attractive. He had been a Division I college athlete. I was a total nerd in high school and college. And, you know, my kind of adolescent self felt spooked, where I partly thought, like, he's out of my league, or I thought this is sort of the Breakfast Club mentality of, like, we fall into different categories. The whole thing felt nerve-wracking, but also butterfly-inducing.
Mm. I have a theory about that, which is that those feelings that kind of harken back to like middle school, high school feelings of like the first stirrings of having a crush on somebody kind of almost pull us back to ourselves or some version of ourselves from that time, you know, so that like the whole, all the high school and middle school feelings of like there being categories or groups kind of come back to us.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And I also think part of what happens when you're getting out of a marriage is you really start questioning, well, who am I and who was I before I got married? And who am I kind of at my core? So it makes sense that when you start dating or when you start examining yourself, like I remember right when I separated, I started listening to music from high school and college that I hadn't listened to in, you know, forever. But yeah, you're right. I was sort of brought back to that, to those feelings and to that state. And then, yeah, I mean, to go back to our, you know, this new blossoming relationship, for several weeks, all through January, February, we were seeing each other and it was wonderful. And for the first time in my life, I thought, oh, this is what it's like to be with someone and not compromise myself. You know, I really kept an eye on my priorities, you know, namely my daughter and my career and my time with my girlfriends. It just felt so new and so different from my relationships in the past, where I think before I had always kind of sought safety and I had thought about being with people. I didn't realize it consciously at the time, but I was never really seeking out equal partners who would challenge me or inspire me. Mm-hmm. And so this was just, it was so exciting and wondrous. And to have butterflies at 41 is such a welcome feeling. I was sort of like walking around beaming and skipping and feeling all of those happy oxytocin feelings of joy. And my real epiphany was, oh, you can be with someone and still value your time apart. And you can have multiple parts of your life coexist. And I felt like I was putting together this puzzle and figuring it all out. And it felt great. And then the pandemic happened. And it felt like it was sort of mocking my theory of being together while apart, because suddenly we were truly apart. And unable to see each other.
Was there a moment when you realized, oh, this is really happening, we're not going to see each other for at least the immediate future? Or was there a moment where you realized that? Because I think a lot of the people, when the pandemic hit, it was like wading into water slowly, like thinking, right, this is maybe overblown, or it's exaggerated, or it's, we're overreacting,
right,
which seems so incredibly naive now. I mean, I certainly felt all of those feelings. And then there's a moment where it just hits home.
Yeah, well, so one complicating factor in our situation is that he is a caregiver for his mother who has cancer.
Mm.
And she lives with him. And that was actually one of the things that we really bonded over. The memoir that I just wrote, which came out a few weeks ago, is about my experience of bringing my mother to live with me in my house when she had dementia and being her caregiver.
Mm.
So that was one of the things that really sort of united us, because it's not an experience that people at 40 or 41 often, you know all that intimately. And so for us, the kind of fear level, I think, was immediately very high because his mother is so immunocompromised.
Mm-hmm.
She just had a stem cell transplant. She basically had no immune system whatsoever. So we couldn't take any risk, you know, from the get-go. And you're right, we didn't know how long it would last. You know, it was like, oh, maybe this will be a couple of weeks. Like, there was that kind of, who knows? And at a certain point, yes, we started to process the fact that this was going to be a while. And he said to me, we were talking one day on the phone, and he said to me, I'm sorry that we got interrupted.
Hmm.
And I immediately felt this, you know, sort of, you know, I said, we haven't been interrupted. Like, I had to, like, I don't know if it was denial or, but I just, you know, I said, no, we haven't been interrupted. And since then, you know, it's interesting. We've definitely talked on the phone a lot. We've had conversations that we wouldn't have had. And I've seen sides of him that I wouldn't have seen, right? Because normally, like, our dating would have unfolded in a certain way. And seeing someone in a crisis, it's kind of like, oh, you get new data that you might not have had access to, you know, potentially like years into a relationship.
Absolutely. We don't know who we're going to be
when
the shit really hits the fan.
That's exactly right. We don't know, you know, who we ourselves are going to be or who our partners are going to be. And it can be quite surprising to all people involved.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I have thought on some level, I'm really grateful to have this information because part of how I view dating now is I want all the goods up front. Like, I want to know this person. And I don't feel like, oh, I really need to be in a relationship. You know, I feel like, oh, I want to know what I'm getting myself into. I've been trying to look at it through that lens of, oh, I'm getting to learn him and he's getting to learn me. You know, but it's also interesting because relationship-wise, it's sort of like we've known each other through the honeymoon first few weeks stage, and then we've known each other through crisis stage, and we haven't really had, like, normal days stage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting. And it's also, I think, the pandemic is making so many of us long for what was just the day-to-day, you know, was just the ordinary, which in so many ways we all take for granted, you know, that we can stop and get a cup of coffee or that, you know, that we have an appointment that we can make in the afternoon or whatever it is. It's just our daily lives, our ordinary blessings, you know, of our daily lives. And it sounds like you've had, you know, both ends of the drama, the exquisite high of, you know, falling for someone and them falling for you. And then this, you know, this strange dystopian kind of nightmarish time that we're all living through and living through it with all the strangeness and with the newness of a new relationship and not being together under the same roof.
That's right. So part of how I think about this time, I think we're all kind of in withdrawal, you know, almost like drug addicts, because what got taken away from us, it's not just about, like, oh, being able to have coffee or being able to go to a restaurant or go to the gym. I mean, all of that together informs our daily life. You know, we're homeostatic creatures where we want some baseline level of this is how life feels. And to have that taken away and ripped away, I think puts us in a state of withdrawal where we're all sort of anxious and thrown and not ourselves. So that's what's so fascinating is to be with someone, except of course we're not actually with each other in proximity, and to be with someone while we're not really ourselves. In terms of the whole, you know, we're together, we're apart. What's also fascinating to me is that I've heard similar sentiments just in different ways through friends of mine who, you know, like some of my married friends will talk about their spouses. And, you know, I've had girlfriends say to me, like, yeah, we're under the same roof all the time. And yet I've never felt more apart. Like we're stuck together, but I feel oceans apart from my spouse or from my partner. And then I've heard these stories of people who were in early relationships who decided to shelter in place together, where their romance was accelerated by these circumstances.
Right. That's so interesting. It's, you know, I think in the future, we're all going to have so many stories or, you know, there are going to be divorces over this. There are going to be babies over this. There's, you know, there are going to be marriages, you know, over this. There's going to be a lot of post-traumatic stress. There's going to be so many waves and waves and waves of experience and feeling, you know, when we are through it, you know, whenever that might be.
That's exactly right.
Do you feel interrupted now, or do you feel like you're, you know, in a relationship that's in this, you know, just in this kind of strange soup of this time?
I like that phrase, strange soup. Yeah, I think at a certain point, you know, this becomes the new normal, you know, whether we like it or not, it's now, we have to accept it. And so I now have come to a place where I think, you know, this isn't interrupted time. It's not that this time doesn't count. It's not that it's a break. It's just time of a different feel and time of a different texture and with a different rhythm. My kind of takeaway is to do my best to just take it one day at a time, one moment at a time. And one of the things I've realized is that the heightened uncertainty that so many of us are feeling right now, truthfully, uncertainty is always with us, you know, whether we're together and like blissfully going off to have a meal at a great restaurant. Like we never know what our fate is going to be. We never know how our relationship is going to play out. I certainly never thought I was going to get divorced. You know, I thought I was going to be with my ex-husband forever. And then the idea of falling in love again was utterly laughable. So I've experienced outcomes that I felt certain would never, ever, ever come to pass. And what I know for sure is that I'm better for them. So I think it's so easy to look at uncertainty and feel fear and apprehension, but there can be welcome gifts on the other side of the fear and of the uncertainty.
I love that. I think that's such a great message, because really we all always are living in uncertainty. We just don't walk around conscious of it with a name attached to it and a virus attached to it and, you know, fantasies attached to that. We walk around with all of our plans and all of our certainties when in fact we're always, my friend Sylvia Boorstein, the great Buddhist teacher, has this great expression, like we're all just hanging on the vine. We're always hanging on the vine. And this just underscores that, but that doesn't have to be terrifying. It is. I mean, I'm not minimizing it, and certainly many people are suffering tremendously. But there's a way in which this uncertainty and learning how to live with it in this time out of time and not wishing the time away, not wishing for it to be over, because this is the day we have.
This is the day we have. This is the time we have. And one thing I thought about, I talk about this in my memoir, because that was, you know, when I was caring for my mother, that was a time of excruciating uncertainty. I didn't know what any given day would look like with her because of her dementia. I didn't have any sort of script for how to be with her. And one thing I really thought about was that, like, if you think about what a diamond is the result of time and pressure, but no piece of coal would ever choose those circumstances. Like, no one opts in for that, because when you're in it and you're in that process, it is excruciating. You don't know when it's going to end. You're submitting to all of this discomfort, but you don't get to the place of clarity and strength and brilliance and that next version of yourself without that process. And I think so often we think of challenges in life, I think especially in America, you know, we think of like challenges as the things that we take on. But I actually think it's the challenges that we don't choose, you know, the challenges that we have to submit to that we never would have opted for. Those are the things I think that really make us shine, because they force us to tap into different parts of ourselves and to find resilience. And when we're in the moment and we think we cannot bear it, we endure and we persist. And, you know, what choice do we have? And we come out stronger. And even if that means facing negative outcomes with difficult things, I think that is not to be shied away from. I think it's to be embraced with the difficulty and with all of the, you know, the recognition of how hard it is in the moment.
Well, that is a beautiful and hopeful message to cap off this conversation. I so appreciate everything that you've said, and I think so many people will relate and will be nodding as they listen, and just wish you the best of luck with your book and your romance and your next steps. So thanks, Maya.
Thank you so much, Danny, and thank you for making space for this time period with this podcast. Oh,
it's my pleasure. All right, take care.
You too.
Thanks for listening to The Way We Live Now. Tell us the way you're living now. We want to hear. Call us on, you might want to get a pen for this, 909-713-8995. That's 909-713-8995. And record your story, and we might just use it on the pod. Also, you can join our Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/thewaywelivenowpod. We are creating a community here, and we would love for you to join us. You can find me on Instagram at Danny Ryder. The Way We Live Now is a production of iHeartRadio. It's produced by Lowell Berlanti. Beth Ann Macaluso is executive producer. Special thanks to Tristan McNeil and Tyler Klang. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Hey guys, back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah! And some waves so we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that!
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in!
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it!
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.